Welcome to Conversations in Cannabis. Today's episode marks the second part of our end of the year wrap-up, featuring interviews from some of California's top brands. These sessions were conducted during Hall of Flowers NorCal and SoCal events, and in this session, we spoke to Keith Sish, co-founder of Los Angeles-based Sunderstorm. We sat down with Keith to talk about everything from his leading edibles brand, Kana, to what it takes to build a brand in the world's largest adult-use market. All this and more on this episode of Conversations in Cannabis. Just to start out, distribution in California is not the easiest in the best of times. Now, right now, we're in COVID. First show back in California since COVID here at Hall of Flowers. How has the pandemic been for you? And looking forward, how do you expect the reemergence of cannabis and basically all events coming back? How do you think that's going to play out?
So the pandemic has been really a boom for the cannabis industry generally. And within that, edibles have done well because I think it's a lot of parents home with kids. And it's a real discreet form of consumption. And so our nano gummies have done really well during the pandemic. Definitely challenging running our company. We have 240 employees. You know, we've had a few cases of COVID through the pandemic, and we've shut down manufacturing. And we had a private company come on site and do rapid tests of every employee before we reopened. So we've actually spent hundreds of thousands of dollars trying to keep both our employees safe and production running. So it's definitely very challenging to manage the company.
Well, but were you surprised that California, not just California, but the totality of the United States, where there is licensed markets, either medical or recreational, that they deemed cannabis essential, did that kind of surprise you that that happened?
To be honest, it was a surprise. I wasn't expecting that. So I think California really set the stage by being the first one to promote that. And the rest of the country followed suit, except Massachusetts, which did shut down their market for a few months. And Massachusetts is fundamentally a socially conservative state, politically liberal, but socially very conservative. And I think the fact that they kind of looked around and saw that, you know, operating cannabis business was essential. I mean, people needed, you know, basically a break from the stress and the pressure and family. So, you know, Massachusetts reversed its decision. So I think that bodes well for the industry moving forward.
Well, and looking at edibles as a whole, again, your booth here for Kana is absolutely amazing. When you're looking at edibles, say during the 215 era here in California, where, you know, you have 1,000 milligram brownies, and now during the legal market, you're seeing kind of a push for micro versus macro dosing. Has that kind of shift surprised you?
You know, the Prop 215 days were kind of the Wild West. There wasn't lab testing. So I think it was really uncertain how much milligrams were. Some were probably more potent than the label, and some were probably much weaker. I think why edibles have really done well the last couple years is your average kind of consumer, mom and pop, you know, grandma looking for something to sleep, can now trust edibles, because when we say it's 10 milligrams, it's 10 milligrams. So we did come out with a 5 milligram nano to meet that kind of microdosable. And I have some friends that basically cut it in half and end up with 2.5. So there's definitely, I mean, there's the whole spectrum, right? You've got people that just want to have the equivalent of a glass of Cabernet, do 2.5 milligrams and just have kind of a nice, chill, relaxing experience, you know, after work. You know, you've got kind of the main part of the consumer market that will probably do, you know, 10 to 20 milligrams. And, you know, they're going to hang out and watch a movie, or they're going to go to a concert or show. And then we just came out just the last couple weeks with a new product for the high dose consumer. So it's a sour belt. And so it's our first sour product for gummies. And the belt is a 50 milligram piece that has indentation, so you could actually tear it apart at 10 milligrams. So we meet the regulations on 10 milligrams, but it's really a way for someone that really needs, you know, a higher dose to basically you know, eat one belt and get where you need to be. So we kind of have the different dosages for the different parts of the market.
Well, which is important, like you said, you know, there's a consumer for every type of product, and you know, especially with the connoisseur crowd, we definitely do like a little bit of higher dosages due to the fact that we're used to it. Let's take a look at bringing brands into the Centerstorm family, right? So when an edible brand comes on the market and they decide that they want to petition you to try to be a part of your family of distribution network, what does that onboarding process look like for you, and how do you determine which product makes the grade?
Yeah, that's actually a simple answer, which is today we only distribute our own brands that we own 100%. So we haven't really, you know, acted as like an herbal or a Nabis, you know, as third-party distribution. We are expanding actually our footprint in both LA and the Bay Area. So next year, I think we're going to open up to new ideas on distribution. I think the concept there is that, you know, I wouldn't want to have two gummy companies, because then there's just a natural conflict of interest. I think you want to round out the portfolio with the major categories, but keep it just one in each category. That way, you know, it's very clear who you're selling and you can promote them to the best. And I think some brands that use third-party distributions that have, you know, 100 brands in it, I don't know if they get the attention that, you know, any single brand would deserve from a salesperson or a distributor. So it's, you know, I like keeping it simple and keeping it relatively a small family.
Well, in looking at introducing your own products to the market, when you're looking at, you know, the categorical approach to cannabis and you're saying, okay, well, I want to enter into the edible market or I want to enter into the dabbable market or the vape market. When you're deciding, say, which part of the industry that you want to launch a new company in, what goes into kind of the research or the research development behind that decision-making process?
Yeah, I think you have to think about what would make your product unique on the shelf. It is very difficult to get shelf space. You know, there's maybe 800, like, really active retailers. You know, maybe it's getting to 1,000. We're actually on the shelves of 650. So we have one of the largest brand footprints of any brand in the state. So you have to kind of ask yourself, when I go in and pitch the buyer in a store that's already got limited shelf space, you know, what is my story going to be that's going to get him off the fence and giving my brand a shot? So I think that's what I would encourage, you know, everybody who's thinking about either launching or has a brand today, you know, what's going to make you unique to get on that shelf.
And you're looking, you mentioned expansion a little bit. I know you said you want to keep it simple. Have you, being here in California, obviously largest adult use market in the world, but have you looked outside of California at all? And are any of the other markets exciting to you?
Yeah, so we actually launched our Kana Gummies, which is really our flagship brand, in three states in the second quarter of this year. So we are now active in about 100 retailers so far in Colorado, and we're on the shelves in Nevada and Massachusetts. So we really believe that, you know, California brands, just the fierce competition, you know, has forced everybody to have the best game, you know, in town. And I think there's an appetite for California brands in these other states that are less mature than our market.
And one thing also about California brands, I believe, versus other markets is it seems like the CPG kind of basis for cannabis products here is really solidified, where there's a brand story, there's really a backing behind what you're doing beyond just, hey, here's a product, let's dump it into a dram bottle or something like that and ship it out. When you're looking at creating a brand story for the brands that you're finally launching, how do you settle on what the vision for that brand is going to be?
You know, I think it has to fit, first of all, under our parent vision, right? So, you know, Centerstorm, my partner Cameron and I started the company in 2015. We both had the benefit of traveling a lot through Asia and Africa and learned a lot about plant medicine and have explored many different types of plant medicine through the years. And so I think it always comes back to, like, how we can have a product that's as natural as possible, offering the therapeutic benefits that plant medicine brings.
Because you mentioned traveling extensively. Now, obviously, there's a lot of international markets finally coming online with cannabis. We're seeing Holland start to do their seed-to-sale program. Spain is obviously starting to explode. Are you surprised at the speed in which cannabis is being accepted, both here domestically and internationally?
Yes and no. I mean, when I think back of smoking weed 20 years ago, I don't think I could have envisioned being here with you today at such an amazing event with all these beautiful cannabis brands. So I think the world has changed radically in my eyes. I think this is really a trend that is just never going to stop. You know, I think it's right there along with, you know, basically, you know, kind of LGBTQ, you know, kind of gay rights. I think it's just a trend that was just never going to stop because it's really the honest truth, right? That we're all created equal. Same with racism. And so I think finally cannabis is in that same trajectory of really truth. And so I imagine that we're going to be living in a very different world 10 years from now where it's going to be commonplace.
Well, I know that the Safe Banking Act, it was reintroduced now again as part of a defense spending bill expected to pass. I believe this would mark the sixth time that the Safe Banking Act has actually passed the House. Are you hopeful for federal legalization? And if federal legalization isn't a possibility in the next 5 years, are you at least hopeful that, say, a Safe Banking Act or some type of regulatory reform for banking at least gets passed?
Yes. I'm not too optimistic on legalization. While the South still has a lot of senators that are, you know, strongly opposed to cannabis and the arc of truth. But I do think there's agreement really on both sides of the aisle over offering banking. It's just not safe having it be a cash industry. And so I think for the safety of, you know, thousands of cannabis employees, it's a good idea. You know, how that actually gets implemented will be interesting to see. And then the real big question is, will that lead to the stock exchanges here, the New York Stock Exchange and NASDAQ, allowing cannabis companies that touch the planet in the United States to be listed on them? So that's the big question.
Yeah, because right now they're all on the Canadian exchange. And the big problem also is the fact that they can't get capital funding to expand, or they can't have intellectual property through the USPTO. Do you think that maybe those things will start to be addressed in the next couple of years?
I think probably there has to be the first domino, which is either some type of safe banking, but some action that the Senate passes, I think will then begin to open up the discussion in many different ways. You know, one of which would be, can we allow these exchanges to list, you know, our companies? Right now, it's really unfair, right? I mean, the Canadian companies can list here, have the liquidity and access to institutional capital, but, you know, our own cannabis companies in the U.S. don't have that same ability. So it's kind of a tale of two worlds.
Before legalization, I know you said you're not that hopeful that it's going to happen, but do you think that maybe a two-thirds majority will be what the final impetus is? Is that you, because I know that conservative states are very into states' rights. So do you think that maybe by legalizing state by state, eventually they'll literally have to because of two-thirds overrule?
You know, that's an interesting question. I mean, right now, the overwhelming majority of Americans across the country are in favor of adult use legalization. You know, a majority of states today already have either medical or adult use. So every time a state or a government, you know, either the voters have a referendum to make it either medical or adult use in a state that didn't have it before, is more pressure on Congress because they're kind of seeing the tea leaves and you know, the world has shifted. No matter how conservative you are, you still have to be in touch with what people are thinking today.
Well, and we're starting to see that shift. I know that Chuck Schumer, I believe, famously said that he was going to legalize it during that legislative session. Didn't happen. Don't expect it to happen. But there is a mentality shift. You're right. And so what do you think? 10 years possibility for legalization or at least a decrim?
So I think something will happen over the next 4 to 5 years for sure. And I think, honestly, the biggest event that's going to impact the cannabis industry is not necessarily legalization. It's interstate commerce. So right now, you know, when we set up Selcana gummies in Colorado, we have to duplicate our manufacturing plant here in California. So we now have 4 manufacturing plants and we'll have 8, you know, 7 or 8 next year. You know, that's not how companies work, right? We're across from Clif Bar in Emeryville. Clif Bar produces for the you know, the entire country in one massive location, allows you economies of scale to really, you know, basically cut costs.
Right.
So what's going to be interesting is when they allow interstate commerce, because then I think the best products, you know, the weed grown on the West Coast is going to basically be what is smoked throughout the country and not weed that's, you know, grown indoors upstate New York. It doesn't really make sense.
Well, even when, I mean, but take a look at 2018 with the Farm Bill, right? So even when hemp got legalized, there were still holdout states that would stop shipments, they would arrest truck drivers. Do you think that maybe once legalization does happen on a federal scale, that maybe like air shipments for at least a while will be the new norm just to prevent rogue states from stopping shipments going through?
I honestly think, I mean, let's just talk about the CBD market for a second, right? Which is the Farm Bill passed in 2018. Everybody thought CBD was going to be now sold in Kroger's and Safeway and, you know, and Sprouts. And here we are, 2021. Since they handed the ball off to the FDA, we don't have clear guidelines today on what we can and cannot do. California still doesn't allow you to manufacture and put it in edible products because the FDA hasn't really come out with clear rules. So basically, it created chaos. So I'm imagining, and I don't want to, I'm not happy saying this, but I think legalization here could cause the same chaos in the future for our side of the THC side of the business.
So would you rather see maybe states kind of figure it out on their own first and then maybe submit to the federal government, hey, here's the best practices from each state, maybe try to implement it this way versus just go full board, or what do you think that the rollout will finally look like?
You know, I think it's healthy for the industry to not have legalization today and allow us to experiment more, show the states that it's safe. You know, we find that when medical marijuana comes into a state, opioid deaths decrease significantly. I mean, it's such an amazing substitute for, you know, pharmaceutical drugs that over the long run, you know, they're great for emergencies, not great for long-term health.
So, well, and I know in Philadelphia, there's a lot of people researching with, you know, universities and stuff like that on opioid reduction by using, you know, either full spectrum or broad spectrum cannabis. The problem with research, though, is that it's extremely limited. Are you hopeful that states will continuously push for more research to happen so that we have the armor that we need in the federal government to say, hey, this is safe, this is how we do distribution, this is how we do our growth, our manufacturing practices. We're cleaner than any other. You eat food that is dirtier than what we grow. So, you know, at what point do you think that maybe research will start to get to the forefront as part of this discussion?
So it's happening now, but research takes, you know, could take up to 5 years to really have enough long-term evidence for, you know, whatever your hypothesis is. So I'm super encouraged that a lot of universities, major universities, have started programs, you know, examining cannabis. The government did ease up a little bit on some of their research rules to make that possible. But it does take years for the research to come through. So in the meantime, we're kind of experimenting with different products and kind of seeing how it is, you know, how people respond for different conditions.
Well, and your products are absolutely amazing. I mean, especially Kana, I absolutely love edibles when I'm traveling. It's literally the only thing that gets me through a long haul flight. when you guys are now coming into fourth quarter of 2021, you just released your sour belts at the 50 milligram dose. What does the future look like for you through 2021 in the fourth quarter and then the first quarter of 2022?
Yeah, so we actually just hired a new chief science officer. So really a focus on innovation and new products. So I think we'll begin to see some new stuff from Kana in 2022, which we're excited about. Don't want to talk too specifically about that prematurely. But I mean, we still have the largest selection of varieties and flavors of any major gummy brands. We have almost 25 different options. So there's definitely something for everybody today.
Well, and definitely want to make sure that we're getting the dispensaries out to you guys at Sunderstorm. If dispensaries want to make sure they want to get your products in their store shelves, how can they best contact you?
We basically have a website where people can go up to. And basically there's a link there to email us with whatever is there. So go to sunderstorm.com or you can send an email to info@sunderstorm.com. And then a team reviews those and we'll push it to the right region. We have 12 regional sales reps, so we've got one in every part of the state.
We would like to thank Keith for his time and being on today's episode. Find out more about Sunderstorm by visiting them online at www.sunderstorm.com. As always, thanks for listening, and we'll see you here on the next episode of Conversations in Cannabis.